Hello, everyone, and welcome to Moms and Murder, our true crime podcast that features me and Melissa, and me is Mandy.
Yeah. No, you're just me now.
That works for me, actually. Those are my initials, so you can call me that if you want.
Yeah, I thought your name was Dandy Mandy.
That's my real name for sure. We are so excited to be recording a new episode for you guys, but as usual, we're going to talk about a few quick things that we have going on. Nothing really major. Just kidding. We do have a major announcement, but
it's so major.
So you'll have to wait just a minute for that. So first of all, we are going to let you guys know about our new hashtag that we just introduced today, which is Friday.
Hour and a half ago.
Right.
2 hour stops.
Yeah. So we had a lot of fun with the I'm Invincible When hashtag, and we had a lot of really fun suggestions that we read to you guys. But I think we're all invincible now because we stopped getting suggestions. So yeah. I think everybody is just completely invincible. So good job. Our mission is accomplished.
There you go. You're all going to survive and look at security cameras. So we've done our job.
Right. So we wanted to keep up the fun of having a hashtag that we used and, you know, continue to keep you guys involved with the show and everything. So we are going to be doing a new one that's going to be On My Dateline. Wait, what is it?
Hashtag On My Dateline.
Okay. Okay, so I was right.
You were right, but you missed
it. I was about
to
say, like, On My Dateline When. I don't know. I'm, like, so out of it today. So anyway, On My Dateline. That's our new hashtag. So we're looking for funny little things that you would want on your dateline. So, for example, Melissa here says that on her dateline, she only wants Keith Morrison to do it. So,
well, currently I'm looking at, no lie, a tweet from Josh Mankiewicz who replied to me on Twitter and wrote, I wish to something I wrote. So are you following us on Twitter to see what Josh Mankiewicz is talking about? Because I'm panicking. I'm just panicking.
And this is not the first time. So we've had, we're basically besties with Mankiewicz at this point.
But I don't think he knows we're not actually besties. I don't know how to break this to him that he's not the one I want. And I'm going to be screwed and have him as part of my dateline. And this isn't what I wanted. Please play this for me. RIP me. I don't like this.
Okay, so we have a really, really, really big thing that we want to share with everyone. We've kind of already shared this a little bit in our Facebook group. And if you have not joined that group, you definitely should. Mum's the word.
Mum's the word.
Yes. It's our favorite group. We love it so much. We have added a few new moderators in there. So it's just a big happy party and it's just growing and growing. So yeah, come join us over there and find out all these fun things before we talk about them on the show.
Right. So, so here's – okay. I don't even know how to say it. I don't know how to start this. So my kids have been sick for like – 17 weeks. I don't even know how long they've been sick. So I haven't slept. So I decided in the middle of the night, I'm going to write the ladies from I Mom So Hard. Hashtag I Mom So Hard.
Right.
Because we love them and they're wonderful.
And hilarious.
But even if you're not a mom, they're so funny. And like as a female, I relate to them a lot. And as a mom, I relate to them. But like, it's just so over the top hilarious. I don't know. You have to watch their videos. It's hashtag I Mom So Hard. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Everywhere.
So I got up the nerve to write them and say, hey, by the way, I heard you guys really like true crime and true crime podcasts. Want to be on our show? Fell asleep finally in like a fever haze or something. And like a day later, or no, the next Monday, I guess, Monday, I got an email back or a message back from them that was like, yeah, we love your show and we want to be on it. And so
we had a complete freak out. Freak out.
We accomplished nothing in our lives on Monday. It was just her and I messaging each other back and forth saying, what are they doing? Are they sure? Oh, no, we're going to screw this up. Can you please check this message to make sure I'm reading it right? Are we being punked? Every type of thing ever. So we've now been in touch with their management because they have management.
Right.
And are currently on tour in a tour bus. And we're scheduling to have them on our show in Hopefully January,
yes. We're working out the details and kind of throwing some dates around back and forth. So we are...
And we're trying to look important. We were like, well, there's one day in January.
Yeah,
we can't
of course. Their manager was like, are there any dates that don't work for you? And we're like, no, we'll literally make anything work. So
but, yeah, so we're trying not to look too
desperate.
Too desperate. But we totally are. I will put my kids on the side of the highway for an hour if I have to talk to them. I'll come back for them. But, you know, we'll make this happen. So please, God, nobody ever find my kids on the side of the highway. So anyway, so we are super excited if you can't tell about that. And we were, so nothing else matters besides that.
Right.
right? I mean, we're...
This is, like, the biggest thing that's ever happened in my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
We have no words. We don't even have words for this.
I mean, Monday through Thursday was a bust for me. I've just been riding this high the whole entire time. So anyway, we're super excited. We will stop talking about that, but we'll announce whenever we get closer, basically on a daily countdown of when we will be, they will be on our show. So.
Oh yeah. It's going to be a big deal. You won't miss it. You won't miss the memo it. Because we're going to be talking about it.
We will write
forever.
Personal invites to everyone. Right. So, you'll receive a save the date card and then a formal invitation. It's basically like a wedding for us. This is like the biggest thing ever. Also, our weddings were pretty big deals. But so so let's get started with the show, for goodness sakes.
Okay. So now that we're done having our little freak out over here,
yeah,
we are going to get right into the episode. And today we're going to be talking about the story of Darlene Gentry and her husband. And Darlene was living a pretty charmed life before all of this craziness went down.
Right.
She was a former beauty queen who had really married her Prince Charming. They had a really good start to their relationship, yeah, and everything was going well. They had a 3-year relationship before they got engaged, and that was back in 1999, and they, of course, got married. And Keith's parents loved Darlene. They thought that she was just perfect for their son, and eventually she became like a daughter to them as well. And I know this is like terrible of me to say, but... I'll do it anyway. But yeah, I'm sure they did like her because I don't want to be mean. Hold I thought on. He was a nice looking guy, but I felt like she was a little out of his league.
Yikes. Coming in hot.
She was a beauty queen right at the for beginning. Crying out loud.
Yeah. I thought he was a very attractive man. I don't base everything on looks. Hashtag.
Apparently she didn't either, but apparently I do.
Yeah. But I read that she was actually so close to the family that they broke up for about a year, and she moved to Dallas and stayed there until her car got broken into and then decided to come on back home. But she was just so close to the family, she couldn't stand to not see them or, you know, to run into them. I can see that coming from a smallish town outside of Tallahassee. If you break up with somebody there, you're just going to see them for the rest of your lives.
Right.
Which is how I ended up in Orlando.
Really?
No. I mean, my husband is here, but I was happy to leave there because you just know everybody. And if you dated somebody that lives there, you see their mom and their sister and they're lovely people, but it's like in your face all the time.
Right. So I wasn't trying to be mean about it, but I'm just saying whenever you have like a beauty queen type, I feel like you typically don't see them with –
I honestly found him attractive.
Yeah. I didn't say he was hideous or anything. Jeez. He was no, like, Ken doll, though.
Kendall or Ken doll?
Ken doll.
Keep going.
So, after their wedding, Keith began working as a traveling electrician for an architecture firm, and the newlywed couple decided to have a home built right next door to his parents' house in Robinson, Texas, which is, if you're not familiar with that area, I had never heard of it, but it's near Waco. It's actually part of the Waco metro area. So, they decided to start a family, of course, after they got their home, and they really had kids back to back to back, from what I understand. They were very close in age. They had 3 boys in a 4-year period.
So help me.
I
have a headache thinking about that.
I don't even need to comment because there's really nothing to say. So after the birth of their second child, Darlene decided that she wanted to pursue a career. And she thought she wanted to go into dentistry at first because she didn't like the way her teeth were.
Which I thought they were fine.
They looked perfect to me.
I literally saw something of her and was like, I wish I had her teeth.
Yeah, yeah. They were like perfectly straight, perfectly white, perfectly everything. So everything I don't have in
Thank
teeth.
Thank you. I know.
So she ended up not going that route, though. She ended up doing a nursing degree, and she really loved that work. She thought that once she started doing it, she said that she thought that was really her calling in life, and that's what she was really meant to do, and so she really loved it. And Keith would oftentimes be on the road for work as much as like 4 days a week, which that has to be really hard. I can't imagine having a spouse who was gone that often. It's already hard enough as a stay-at-home parent just to be home all day long with the kids. And then if I didn't have that like 6 p.m. time to look forward to every night, I mean, I would lose it.
Yeah, know? Like, I know. I have to have an adult. 6 p.m. on Friday, I'll see somebody. Right. That's too much for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I just couldn't do that.
More power to the people that can.
Right. But you can see how it would, like, take a toll on a relationship.
Sure.
Not having all that time spent together in the evenings and stuff like that. So I can imagine that was hard for them, especially with 3 young sons. Right. That's, like I said,
right there.
It's hard. So Keith's parents, of course, being that they lived right next door, would help out with the kids and babysit, and they would give the couple time to spend either with each other or to spend just with friends doing whatever they wanted to do, something fun. And that kind of became a regular thing, I gathered, that the kids would go sit at Grandma and Grandpa's kind of frequently, and Darlene and Keith would go out and do their thing.
Right.
So Keith's father said in a Dateline interview that Keith did not really care for the way Darlene would handle the kids, and that she would kind of let them go wild and scream a lot. And I can honestly just picture their household, because I have two boys and I know how loud things can get and how fast things can take a really weird turn where suddenly everyone is making all kinds of weird noises and screeching and squealing. And like, I mean, it just.
You speak from experience.
I speak from experience. So I can just imagine that what his father was meaning whenever he said that she would let the kids run wild. And I'm sorry, there is no letting sometimes. Sometimes it's just – it's not that you're letting them, but you just get to a point with it where you're like, I can't do this. Like, whatever. Yeah. You know, like there's
– You want to quit, but there's no one to give your two-week notice to, so you're just stuck there with all the screaming. I've been there.
So by 2005, Keith's parents started to notice that something really was not quite right with their marriage anymore, and it seemed very strained, and they began spending a lot of their free time apart instead of together. Darlene would leave the kids with her in-laws so that she could go partying, basically. Hmm. And they just no longer seemed really happy, and they started having a lot more frequent arguments. And most of their arguments were centered around this financial situation,
right,
which is a common argument in a marriage, I would say, and especially
daily.
When you,
no.
Right. I fight about it with you.
I know.
By the way, you still owe me for that cheeseburger I brought over.
Nobody needs to know that. You ate one too, so I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I stopped at McDonald's, guys. Is anyone surprised? So Darlene was just one of those people who liked to have things a certain way. She liked to look a certain way. She liked for her home to look a certain way. She wanted a certain quality of material things, and she really would not have a problem just spending the money to buy those things.
Right.
And probably did spend a lot of money on her looks and, you know, just makeup and clothes and all that stuff. She was a beauty queen, so
right.
It's just like in her blood. I feel like she just has to have it all.
Mandy and I sit here with no makeup, and I'm in an actual bathrobe over my clothes. We know nothing about this life.
Nope. Despite the couple's downward spiral, Keith was determined to make it work for the sake of their children. He was a very wonderful father, and it was a role that was really important to him. And he even had told friends and family through their troubles and everything that he wasn't going to leave her and the kids. Like, he just wasn't going to do that. So, you know, it's pretty commendable.
Yeah, very admirable, I would say. On Wednesday, November 9th, 2005, around 6:15 a.m., Keith's father, who, again, they live next door, he was awake and reading the newspaper and noticed there was police activity at his son's house, which that has to be terrifying.
I would say so. It's early in the morning. It's so early, and it's like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah, nothing good happens at that point. So he wants to know what's going on, and he goes outside and is greeted by police officers who tell him to stay in his own yard. He tells the police that his son and grandsons live there, but police would not give him any information and told him to just stay on his property, which...
I would lose my mind.
Lose your mind.
I would absolutely – they would have to handcuff me because I would
John
be like
– John Q the whole thing.
Yeah. I would be like, nope, I'm going in. Like, you know, like, you're not keeping me out of there.
Hey, look, what's that? Yeah. Run the other way. Oh, man, we're the worst. So little did Keith's parents know that Darlene had placed a 911 call just a short time earlier that morning to report that her husband had been shot and was lying on the bed making, quote, gurgling sounds. In the 911 call, she tells the operator that she believes someone had broken into their home and shot Keith. She claimed that she'd been sleeping in her son's room because he was sick and had a hard time sleeping. And when she woke up that morning, she found a door open, all her husband's guns missing from the safe, and then she found her husband gravely injured in the couple's bed. So.
Already right off the bat, it sounds fishy.
Right. But she says this in the 911 call. Her 911 call was basically... Here's everything that happened, and then my husband is
right. Yeah, the first words out of her mouth were, "I was sleeping in my son's room."
It's because like she was sick.
Right, and, she's all right.
Alibi.
Right, and it's that just blows my mind. I feel like that is like the biggest like piece of
tell.
Right. That she definitely is not telling the truth right. anyway, because that does, if you really came upon something like that, I mean, the first hysterical words out of your mouth are going to be like, my husband has been shot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need an ambulance to come right now. Like, you're right. not going to be going into your backstory.
Yeah. No.
Before you even tell them what the problem is, yeah. you know?
Well, I've always had like compassion for people that have gone through these kind of things. And you like, what are you going to say on a 911 call? You just don't know what's going to spit out of your mouth
no,
at all.
You don't.
I had to call 911 earlier this year for something with my son. And I used to think, I can see how people go through this. But I literally was like, you got to get here now. Just come. This is what happened. But I wasn't going into this backstory. Like, we were at the park earlier and now we're home. And I was in the other room and blah, 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 blah. He had an allergic reaction. But anyway, okay. So yeah. So anyway, after having to make a 911 call myself, I realized, no, you're just getting to the points. You're
right.
You just want help as quickly as possible and you're going to get it as quick as you can. I heard on one podcast I listened to, Gone at 21, they talked about how, like in this police interrogation video, how people, if they don't say the person's name, if they kind of go around all of the details and give you all this, it's basically a huge indicator of they're kind of detaching themselves from what they have done or what they could have been involved in. So anyhow. Anyway, so police rushed to the scene where they were expecting to find a burglary situation that involved a shooting. When they arrive at the home, they find multiple guns laying on the front yard, which, what? You're breaking right. in the house and stealing guns, but right. you're not taking the guns with
right.
you?
Right, that is so odd. Like, why? I mean, if I was the officers, I would have definitely been...
Oh, they were. They're on, like, audio saying, yeah. like, this doesn't look right.
Right, something about this is just not right.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like a typical burglary scene yeah. that they would go in
Which
on.
Which you want them to assess it, but you basically want them to take the... to follow the facts. You don't want them to come up with an assumption right away that she's done something. You want them to follow the facts where they lead you. So there was some discrepancies and conversation about that in her trial. So once they secured the house and got Darlene and the kids to a safe place, the EMTs were able to enter and attempt to save the life of Keith. So figure they're still thinking there could be somebody inside the house
right.
as they go through it.
They actually had put Darlene and the kids in a back bedroom of the house to kind mm-hmm. of just corral them in there until they could clear the house. Like, an officer asked her if she would stay in there so he could clear her house and then right. they could get the help to go in and help her husband. So she did that, sat in the back room, and I don't know, all of that just seems like so just crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That is a weird practice, in my opinion, to like have them stay in the house. Like, well, you would think they would take them outside and like,
or like across the street is right. my in-laws. Can I just right. walk over right. there, please?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And to have him in there with the dad, I don't know. That's just an upsetting.
Yeah,
and they're going to hear everything going
right,
on.
Right. And they already know. I mean, kids, yeah, they're kids and they don't know everything, but they are a lot more observant than you give them credit for. And so, of course, these little boys see police cars and right. fire trucks and yeah. ambulances right in their front yard, yeah. you know? And so it's like, I don't know. It really is sad to think about that.
For sure. So despite having a background in nursing, Darlene did nothing to render aid to her dying husband. She said that her thoughts were immediately to get her children and get them to safety and claimed not to know why she didn't do anything and try to save Keith's life at that moment. Here's the thing. I kind of get that. You don't want your kids to see
anything.
Of that. No. You would not. That's nothing against my husband or anything, but my husband would agree that he'd want me to get the kids and get them to safety. You
right.
know what I mean?
And get them away from seeing
yeah,
anything.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, because, I can't think of anything more horrifying than, like, your kids walking in and, like, seeing you trying to, like, revive,
yeah.
like, their dad. Like, no, that's
think,
awful.
Like, I mean, she has a perfect, like, run them to their grandparents' house, come right back
right.
and help. Like, I wouldn't care if somebody was in the house. That wouldn't be my issue. It would be for my kids, but for me, I wouldn't care. I'd want to help my husband, but to not do anything, not to bring them across the street, that just
yeah.
doesn't add up to
and
me.
Especially when you have a background in nursing, and so you are fully trained, like, you know her brain has to immediately go into like medical mode
yeah
whenever she sees something like that. So it is
but
kind of weird, but also not, like you said.
I've heard people say that when it's themselves or their family member, even with a background in nursing, sometimes it's not even the nursing that takes over, it's still your emotional
right.
whatever. So I guess it depends on what kind of how your brain works. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me that having her in-laws across the street. She didn't just run them over.
Right.
I'll never buy into that.
No. Yeah, I don't know.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing DashPass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With DashPass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, DashPass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With DashPass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly DashPass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, DashPass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for DashPass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. DashPass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the 5th chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
So a short while later, the EMTs took Keith out on a stretcher, and it was really at this moment that his parents, who of course had been watching from their front lawn, were able to realize, you know, the magnitude of the situation and that something really, really bad had happened. And, you know, they said they saw him on a stretcher with like the breathing masks and everything on. And so he was taken to the hospital, barely clinging to life, but he was alive. He was breathing, and they rushed him to the hospital. So dispatch had been informed that there was a burglary where the homeowner had been shot, but police were almost immediately suspicious of Darlene's story. The gun safe that she says was opened and cleaned out completely, no right. guns left in it. There was no signs of forced entry at all, and it appeared that that had actually been opened with a key. And I had heard on one of the documentaries that we watched on this that it actually had a glass front.
Right.
So if it was really like a burglar trying to do a quick snatch and grab, like they would have just busted out the glass.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not going to go hunting around looking for a key so that they can open this gun safe, you know, or
Everyone's
anything like that.
Uncle in the South has this gun.
Right.
Like you can picture it. Exactly.
Yes, exactly. So the weapons that were on the front lawn also, of course, raised some red flags, which we talked about a little bit. And so just really within a few minutes of speaking to Darlene and hearing and putting together all of these things, the police pretty much right away had already talked amongst themselves and were saying something's not right here. And then one of them actually said, I think she did it.
Yeah.
Well, this is just minutes after they get there. So it's like, she did a really crappy job of setting this up.
Oh, none of that makes sense. If she's to guilty, which we'll get there, who steals guns and then leaves them on the lawn?
That makes no sense.
You did nothing. You went in, shot a man, stole his guns.
And put him on the front lawn?
Laid him out for him to dry? I don't understand the point here.
And by the way, he was shot one time. It was a single shot. So it's not like a frantic situation where a burglar is surprised or something and just fires away. You know, this was a very precise one shot.
Yeah.
Well, like placed, you know, where the person who shot him wanted it. And like, so, I would be a little, I think as a police officer, I would be suspicious of that whole situation. And plus he was in bed. So it's like, what was... You know,
was he fighting you? No,
right. It's not. Yeah, it just doesn't.
There's
really
no
seem right.
motive.
There,
for
no,
this at
it
all.
Makes no sense.
No.
So police said that a burglar would not typically shoot someone unless they were confronted, which clearly didn't happen since Keith was still in bed, like I said. And they asked Darlene to just come down to the station for a formal interview. I feel like you know you're in trouble if the police are like, we need you to come with us, like down. Because I feel like normally they will just question you there on the site and then they'll say, okay, we'll get in touch or, you know, whatever. But if they ask you to go to the police station, you know.
Well, yeah.
And or you should know that you are in trouble.
I had this conversation with my husband. I was like, by the way, if anybody ever asks you for anything, unless you've killed me, but any other reason they ask you to go to the station, you ask for a lawyer immediately.
Right.
He's like, what? No, that makes you look guilty. I was like, no.
No, 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 no.
I've watched confession tapes on Netflix you will go to jail for a
That show is crazy.
It's too upsetting.
It's crazy.
It's too upsetting.
Yeah, if you guys don't watch that, you should. When Darlene got to the police station, she told the police that she was going to be willing to fully cooperate. She gave a sample of her DNA. She did her fingerprints. She did it all and, you know, of course, is saying she has nothing to do with this. And so, of course, she's going to be willing to help the investigation along, just like a wife would do.
Right.
So she told police that she had been at a friend's house the night before and had returned home between 8 and 9 p.m. She said that her and Keith had discussed some of their financial problems and the conversation got a little bit heated, but she actually left the house and left him there alone to kind of mull it over and kind of a cool down period.
Right.
And when she...
Been there.
Yeah. Yes. And when she returned to the home, Keith was a lot more level-headed, and she says that they had a completely regular civil discussion, and it was a productive conversation, and there was no arguing, and which I just don't – I mean, I guess it's possible. But if you – I don't know how you go from, like, it's such a heated argument that someone has to leave the premises to, like, okay, I just came back, and then we just sat down and had a little tea party and talked about
no,
it.
No, like, it's typically like, you come back and say, we'll talk about this tomorrow.
Like, I'm going to bed.
I'm going to bed.
And don't lay next to me.
Yeah. You sleep out there. I love you. I hope you don't die in the middle of the night because I'd feel really terrible. But not I'm going to kill you.
Right, right. Darlene said that the two of them actually went to bed together, but that since the kids were sick, she said all three of them were sick, which I understand whenever one is sick, then it just spreads like wildfire to everyone and their friends.
Yeah.
So the kids were up and down all night because of this illness they had, and she was kind of up and down with them. She said she went to the living room, turned on a movie. She would go lay in the kids' beds, and they were just kind of up and down all night.
I believe all of this.
I do, too. This all sounds very typical. So.
Very familiar.
So she was still in the baby's bedroom when she woke up on the morning of November 9th. She said that she was awakened by the baby, like, climbing all over her head, which, again, I understand.
Adds up.
I can perfectly envision this.
Yeah.
And so she realized the time that it was and that she was already kind of getting a late start to her day and she really needed to get up and get moving. And so she got the kids up, started doing their normal morning routine. And then I guess she just felt a cool breeze and she was like, oh, the back door's wide open.
Yeah.
This is what she says. And so she went to go shut the door and on her way she realized that the gun case is wide open, all the guns are missing, and she got scared, according to her, and thought maybe someone was in the house. And so she says that she started calling out for her husband, telling him to get up and, you know, come check out whatever's going on, and she gets no response from him. So then she goes into the bedroom and she hears this, you know, what she describes as gurgling sounds, and looks over on the bed basically and sees her husband with a gunshot wound to the head laying in bed on his back and all this. And what was the other thing she said that just was so
– pink foam coming from his mouth.
Yeah. Yes.
It was too much.
We are not real big on the descriptive. Like, I don't really need a vision of all of that because it's just terrible. But that's what she said. So that was her official statement.
Yeah.
So
that, I've never heard of that's what she said be so that's bad. What she, I normally said. Enjoy them, and that I didn't was even realize a big downer.
Oh my gosh.
You ruined that phrase for me now.
The detective said that Darlene showed little interest in her husband's condition and never really even asked how he was doing after they took him to the hospital and right. they're interviewing her, and which you would think like, that would be weird. You would think like, I can't do an interview right now yeah. because the only thing I'm thinking about is whether or not my husband's yeah. going to survive.
I would say, can we do this at the hospital? Like, let me right. sit in the room with them. Right. I don't care.
Like, I have got to go. And, like, yeah. I, you know, I have three children whose dad was just killed. Like, you know, I can't be sitting here talking to you. You know yeah. what I mean? That's what I would say.
Yeah, I know.
But well, I would also
Mandy's
be innocent.
Working on her alibi already. Good luck.
So about an hour into Darlene's police interview, the hospital called the police station with an update on Keith. And it was a very unfortunate and sad update, and it was that Keith was now brain dead
yeah.
and was not thought to be going to be able to come out of this. So they actually needed the police to bring Darlene up to the hospital so that she could consent to removing life support and to consent for organ donation.
Right.
And so a few moments after they stopped the life support, Keith did pass away.
Another problem I have with this, if you have me in a police, you know, interrogation or whatever, and my husband is, you know, dying, and you're telling me to pull the plug, can I spend a little bit of time in there with
right.
him?
Right. I don't want to like, just – right.
No, if he's being kept alive on life support, that's the whole point. Can we give it a little bit of time? Do we have to immediately sign things away? That doesn't – I wouldn't be so quick to sign. No. I hope my husband's happy about that answer, too. Yeah. I really do.
Darlene eventually realized that the police were suspecting her of murder. So she finally realizes this after hours of talking to them, I guess, and realizing that their line of questioning is basically right. like pointing fingers at her.
I'm concerned about her abilities as a nurse if she's just catching on to this.
Right. So she eventually is like, do I need to get a lawyer? And this is after she's already like given them like hours of interview.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's a little
Don't
late
ask,
for that now.
Do I need a lawyer?
Right. If you have God. To ask, you probably needed one 3 hours ago.
Yes, exactly.
So she did eventually lawyer up, so to speak, and of course, at that point, all of the police questioning had to stop, and anything that they were doing in her home as far as looking for evidence, they had to stop doing all of that, because once you get a lawyer, they're not allowed to just go and do any of that now. Now it all has to go through all the legal
right.
mumbo-jumbo crazy stuff, which I know nothing about.
Yeah. So, and Guilty Podcast isn't even a thing anymore, so we can't even ask them.
Oh my gosh. Don't even. That's the
No,
saddest.
It's on a hiatus, but we feel responsible that we've taken this whole thing down, and we really liked Guilty Podcast, and you should write them and tell them that you want them to make new episodes.
Yes. Even if they only do them like once a month.
I know.
I would listen.
Somebody has to take the bar exam, so.
Somebody.
Continue.
So the detectives who were at the Gentry house were searching for evidence, and they had realized that one of Keith's weapons was actually missing from the home. They had checked registration records and were able to account for all of the firearms except for one, and it was a .22 caliber pistol that Keith's dad had given him a few years prior. It was a gift. Detectives became concerned that this must be the murder weapon, and they really wanted to find it so that they could confirm that
right.
and match it to, you know, the
ballistics.
Right.
Did I help you with that word?
Maybe. So they found another bombshell piece of evidence in the home, and it was, surprise, surprise, a single .22 caliber shell casing, and it was in kind of a weird place, if you ask me. Not a place where you think you would find a shell casing. It was hidden inside of a latex glove that had been shoved all the way down to the bottom of the trash can.
Rule number one of
Don't hide things in your house.
Don't mom. Hide it in your trash can. Oh my goodness. The first thing they're going to do is see what you've thrown away.
Right. Yeah. And then just wrapping it up in a latex glove, like, oh, this will do.
Yeah.
Like,
does nobody want to stay out of jail? I don't understand this.
This clearly was not planned out.
No.
So investigators found a well on the property, and they thought maybe that she had, like, ditched the gun in there. So they actually got a large magnet out there and suspended it by a rope and dangled it down to the bottom. It's all very technical.
It's like a whole baby Jessica situation there.
So they didn't find anything there, but I thought that was funny. Not funny, but I thought it was – I don't know. I don't know what I thought it was.
Interesting.
Interesting.
We need just a list of adjectives to use.
Yes, we do. Somebody send me synonyms for basic words.
How do you English, dear Google?
So once Darlene had acquired an attorney, like I said, police had to stop all the searching of the home, but they took that shell casing and glove with them as evidence because anything, I guess, that they found prior to them having to stop, they're allowed to keep.
Well, because technically they had her consent at that point.
Right. So as part of the investigation, police discovered that Keith had two life insurance policies totaling $750,000, which the police, of course, believed would be a good motive for Darlene to murder Keith, especially given that Darlene had already told them about their financial problems and their arguments that they've had over them.
Yeah.
So kind of as like, you know, whenever you're guilty of a crime, like one way or another, you're like, there's just no way to lie about it and hide it because like police are not stupid. And, like you don't even have to be a detective to like realize like, like she's like spoon feeding them all the information they need to build a case against her. I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I just think it's funny and crazy how people just say things to police. And then
whenever she said they argue about finances, I was like, well, I probably wouldn't have said that.
Right.
That night. I mean, I
wouldn't have told them that we literally argued the night before.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd left and came back. Yeah. I don't know if I would go on that unless she'd already told like a friend she did that because then that's just going to come up later.
Someone else is going to mention it.
All right. Maybe she was smarter than I gave her credit for. She's not.
No, I still think you should just keep your mouth shut.
Just lawyer up.
Like, right. Just don't talk to the police without a lawyer. It's just good advice.
Also, we're very pro law enforcement.
Yes, we are.
We're also pro not going to jail for something you didn't do.
Right. So the police, of course, just didn't believe any of her story at this point. They really, really had a very strong feeling that she had something to do with it or that she at least knew more than what she was leading on. And they had a forensics team perform a DNA test of that latex glove. So on the outside of the glove, they found Keith's blood, which seems like a bingo to me.
Makes sense.
But on the inside of the glove, it had Darlene's DNA. So the inside meaning the part that her hand was touching.
Right.
So she said, well, I'm a nurse and I would have brought these home from work. So of course my DNA is going to be on there. But
when does a nurse bring a glove home though?
Well, honestly, she had said that he was having some, what'd she say, blood sugar issues or something like that. So maybe she was like testing his sugar levels at home or whatever.
And that would make sense if there was blood on the outside of it too. I'll give her that
it
one.
It would.
Point for Darlene.
You can't really explain the shell casing inside the glove. Well,
that was unfortunate.
Yeah, that was just a
really. Darlene, I was almost helping you there.
But also, just because you took the gloves, I mean, from your office, like, so your DNA would be on the outside of the glove then, because you wouldn't have put it on to take them home.
Yeah,
so that still makes no sense.
Drive around town with them on.
Right, and just like,
what if you're a germaphobe? Maybe you would.
Maybe.
So Darlene ends up being arrested that November 28th, later that month, and she immediately bonded out with a $50,000 bond, which we've read was raised in part by Keith's family.
Right. They were adamant that she was innocent.
Yeah. And they loved her like a daughter.
Right.
So as she moves out, as she leaves jail, she actually ends up moving in with the Gentrys across the street because, for one thing, how hard would it be to be in this home with your boys and, you know, these memories of your husband and stuff. So she ended up living over there
for a while.
Yeah, for a while.
For a few months.
Yeah. And so during this time, she actually gets in touch with a home builder named Robert Pavelka. She wanted to know if there were any homes for sale as she was ready to move out of the home where Keith had been murdered, as we said. She wants to start a fresh life with her kids. And I get it. I would not want to go back there. Guilty or not guilty.
Right.
Let's burn that house down. I don't want to be there anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Pavelka gives Darlene directions to buy a piece of land that he had for sale out in the woods. So she's thinking of building this new life for her and the boys. And now she has this, you know, she's looking at this money coming in from a life insurance policy to be able to do this.
Right.
And so she said that it was actually the perfect property and it had a nice pond on it, which she thought was really important because she wanted her boys to fish, and that's like something they could have done with their dad, those sort of things. So Robert Pavelka was very adamant that she wanted this pond, this property, because it had this wonderful pond. So she tells him she'd take the property and she wanted to have a house built on it. And again, the pond was like her big selling point. He remembered that big time. So this excitement from Darlene actually quickly turned into fear, and she called Pavelka again to ask if the pond could be filled in.
That's odd.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah. She tells him that she thought it over with her family, and she realized that having a pond would be too difficult of a danger for small children. I get this.
Right.
I totally do get that. I have a fun pond story.
Oh, my goodness. Please tell the pond story. This is the best story I've had all week. Oh, my goodness, you guys.
So we were at Mandy's picking something up or dropping something off the other day, and we just let the kids run wild on Mandy's acre of property because they can.
On Mandy's farm.
On Mandy's farm. Hashtag Mandy's farm. So my son, I guess, didn't realize it was like a pond area that you have.
Yeah. So we have a concrete pond. It's not like a
– it's a man-made pond, right? No?
Well, it's concrete, so obviously. Okay. No. Yeah, you know all the naturally occurring concrete ponds.
I don't know how these things work.
So it's not like a dirt pond, like right. In the ground, like, you know, in
– it's a fancy pond.
It's a concrete pond. Well, it's not that fancy because we just don't do anything fun with it. So anyway, this time of year, we get like a really big bloom of a certain type of algae, and then it actually covers the top of the water, and it makes it look very similar to grass. Like, you would definitely think that it was a solid surface, and if you didn't know there was water there, think that it was just like another area, a landing or whatever that you could – I mean, it kind of looks like a mini golf course or something like that.
So if you're 4 years old and you're on Mandy's farm and you're walking around and you see, oh man, this is a great spot, one level to the next. And so my son just walked up to it and you just see him at the back of his head and you just see him like hop, like just to go to the next. And he just turned around in a panic, green everywhere.
He like stood up and he was like, it's water, Mom. Yeah.
I like how quickly.
It's not deep, though. No. It's not deep. He didn't go underwater or anything like that.
I didn't even bother to run because I'm just so used to these kind of shenanigans. I'm like, just get out. And Mandy has a towel and he's like running around their yard naked. None of these things are shocking to me at all.
This is our real life, guys.
Totally normal story. But when I remembered that this story had a pond, I was like, oh, man, I got a total pond life story. So back to the story. And my poor child's shame. So Pavelka thought it was really strange that she no longer wanted this pond. And that's kind of a weird thing to like say, I want this property, but fill in the pond anyway. Like just buy another piece of property.
That doesn't have a pond. Let somebody else enjoy the pond.
Right. Thank you.
How dare you fill in a pond?
It's like filling in a swimming pool to me. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I really
Someone's
don't.
Someone's already done this. Right. So he actually already knew that Darlene was a suspect in her husband's murder. And so he becomes suspicious and calls the police.
He had like a friend on the police force.
Yeah.
Right. Like all he was thinking was like, well, this lady is, you know, a possible suspect for murder and she's asking me to fill in this pond. Like something seems a little fishy about that. So I'm going to contact my friend in the police force and just be like, hey, do you think this is weird? Because I think this is weird.
I know. You know, like everything in my life is leading up to a moment I can call the police and get like this kind of thing too.
So as it turns out, the police did think it was weird and they wanted to check it out. So they had a dive team go out to the pond and they put them in the water. And of course, at this point, they do believe that they're searching for a weapon. They think that she may have like ditched the gun in the pond and then they're going to go and look for it.
Right.
So it only took them 15 minutes and they found what they were looking for.
Right.
They recovered a .22 caliber pistol that was matching the description of the gun that they believed was used to shoot Keith Gentry in the head. So they knew, they being police, knew that they would need to find a way to solidly tie Darlene to the gun found in the pond and thus to the murder. Unless they can do that. You know, so they found a gun in a pond.
Yeah.
You know, unless they can prove that it was her.
It's still weird because she wanted the property, but it's
right,
not.
Right, right. Well, obviously. Right, exactly. Which you have to have definite. You know what I mean? If you're going to.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right, yeah, exactly. And it's just funny, too, to hear her, like, try to. Well, I'll talk about that in a minute.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
So they devised a plan, and they enlisted the help of Robert Pavelka again, since he was so willing to help them in the first place. They figured.
He's mail me. I would totally do this.
Yeah. So Pavelka was supposed to call Darlene and tell her that he needed to drain the pond first before he could fill it, which is legit. You can't just start filling a water hole.
I was trying to figure that out, how that happened.
But. Yeah. No, that would take. No,
I don't understand concrete ponds, so you know, I'm lost.
Lauren, we are sisters. That's true. And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists. We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
So the police were hoping that Darlene would kind of panic and return to, you know, thinking that, oh my gosh, they're going to drain this pond and they're going to see this gun just like laying down there. So they were hoping that she would feel that way and that she would actually return to the pond and try to look for the gun.
Right.
And of course, she would know which area she threw it in. So
if
they caught her coming back and looking in the pond in the area where they found the gun, well, then they're going to be like, bingo.
Yeah.
The only reason you'd be there is because you're looking for what you threw in there.
Right.
So they actually set up a video camera in the woods and faced it towards the pond, and it was all this big secret, and they were just hoping to get her on camera going and doing this. They want to catch her. So they staked out the area. The police actually sat around for almost 2 days. They just stayed in their car round the clock, morning, noon, and night.
That sounds like a good job.
Honestly, I would be okay with that. Yeah, if all I have to do is just sit there and watch things.
Yeah.
I mean,
the rest of their job is incredibly dangerous. But right. I can take the pizza on the side of the road gig.
Yeah. I feel like the stakeout is like, would be, it's like a vacation.
Yeah. Like. The stakeout on this is a vacation.
Right.
A lady in a pond. Right. Yeah.
So they waited and waited, like I said, about 2 days later, and here comes Darlene pulling up in her SUV. I believe that Robert Pavelka actually had to contact her a second time because they were worried that she wasn't going to come.
Right.
And so he contacted her again and had said, like, hey, I can't get to the pond until tomorrow or whatever he said. And so then they waited a little bit more. Well, then here she comes. She pulls up in the SUV. She gets out, walks in towards the woods, and had on these like mucking boots basically and just wades right into the pond, right into the area where the gun was found. So she was looking for several minutes, and then finally, of course, she doesn't realize that the police already have the gun. So it's not even there anymore. Right. This is all just a setup. And so she searches around for a while and then finally gives up and just turns around, walks off and leaves.
Real quick. If you thought you could be in trouble for this gun, would you give it 10 minutes or would you just be in there until the sun came down?
Oh, yeah. I would be all over that pond.
Yeah, I'd be swimming. I'd have, like, all my goggles and stuff on. But she was, like, in there for a while, and they were, like, she was going to town. And if you watch the video, she's got a stick, and she's just hitting around. But the police had actually put a stick in the pond kind of to show where they found it. So they knew exactly where the gun was found, and she was all over that area. She wasn't on the other side of the pond. She knew exactly where she had thrown it.
Right, exactly. So now they have her on camera doing this. And like I said, she didn't realize they had already taken the gun and already had sent it off to, you know, the forensics lab and everything so that they could confirm whether or not this was the weapon that was used to kill Keith. So they were able to confirm that the shell casing that they found inside of that latex glove was fired from the gun they found in the pond. And that was enough. That's all they needed to indict Darlene for the murder. So during her trial, the jury was able to hear the 911 tape that we talked about earlier that was just very strange and scripted sounding.
Yeah.
And they were presented with all the physical evidence, which there was not really a ton of physical evidence. They were saying this was kind of a circumstantial case until they had found the gun. And then that's really all they needed.
Well, the glove and the shell. I mean, that's something.
Right. So the final piece of evidence that was presented to the jury was that videotape of Darlene searching the pond. And they showed them that right before the prosecution rested their case. So that was like the last thing they saw is like this blonde beauty queen wading into this like nasty pond. Yeah. And, you know, try to explain that one, Darlene.
She did try to explain it. Did you hear her?
I did.
It was infuriating.
All of it is infuriating. It is. If you hear her talk. Okay. So she has done interviews, multiple interviews, and it is like she is so full of herself. Like, I wanted to jump through the TV and just like smack this woman because the way she talks about this case and about her husband's death and the way she like describes it and maintains how innocent she is and just says like, you know, of course I didn't hurt him. Like, and just she just blows off all of the evidence against her. Well, and it's like, really? Like, you're sick in the head. Like, that you can actually sit there and describe to police like that you heard these gurgling sounds and that he had this pink foam coming out of his mouth. I'm like, you shot him. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, that's so crazy to me that she could just sit there and say, that's like psychopathic. Like,
the pond thing was really upsetting to me because she said, well, I heard rumors around town that somebody found the gun in and I just decided to go look myself. Well, why would you call the police or have your lawyer call the police and say, we've heard these things. Could you please check it out? Like, get a dive team in there. Why on earth are you going to want to go in there yourself, dummy? But she was like, oh, I realized after that was a bad idea. You think? I mean, it was a great idea, really. I'm super happy with it. But,
right.
But no. Sometimes I feel like if you could give me any other motivation in this case, that's one thing. But to somebody steal all the guns and put them outside and then shoot somebody and then ditch it in the new property you're buying, like,
that's not smart.
Doesn't add up at all. Mm-mm. It doesn't add up for anyone else to have done that.
No, exactly. Like, who else would have had...
Why would you break into somebody's house to shoot them and steal their guns and lay them outside?
No, right, exactly. And that's what they're saying. That's why they police from right from the beginning. They were like, no, that's not really how a burglary goes down.
I think she was ticked off when he went to bed and she was just steaming over it.
So when do you think she shot him? In the middle of the night or in the morning? Like, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, when did she do this? How long had he been laying there in the bed like that? Because you would think that by 6 a.m. she would be – I mean, that's a long time from 9 p.m., you know what I mean? Like, you would think that by then things would have been calmed down and, like, you know? So it makes me wonder, like, when did she do this? And, like, I don't know.
I almost think she shot him and panicked, which – because why else wouldn't she have shot him more than once? You know what I mean?
Like, right.
After you've shot him and you realize, oh, my gosh, I've done this, and then she's just waiting it out because – what if you call 911 right then? Then he's going to be able to identify that you did this.
Right.
Man, we're really trying to get people out of murder charges. That's not the case at all. I'm just very passionate about this because this is so upsetting for her little boys and
for
his parents. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair that she was terrible. So selfish.
So she continues, like I said, to maintain her innocence and just talks candidly about this as if she has nothing to do with it. And I wrote in my notes here that it's sick and disgusting how she can sit there and describe, like, his final moments knowing that
Shut up, darling.
Right. Like, no one's making you do these interviews. Like, you don't have to keep telling this lie over and over again. Like, nobody wants to hear anything come out of your mouth at
but
this
point. But I have really good news. She looks terrible now. Like, the last photos I saw of her, like, this month.
She's not aging
awful.
Well.
No, I was glad to see that.
So in February 2010, though, she actually challenged her conviction and basically is accusing the police of misconduct and the prosecutors and saying that the police and prosecutors used Robert Pavelka to frame her and set her up. And it's like, why? Why would they do that? You know what I mean? If anything, this, like, beautiful mom of three, if anything, they're going to be looking for other possible suspects because – everyone's not going to want to see that being the outcome.
Right.
Like, it's not like she's, like, some thug on the street and they're like, we're just going to pin this on her because it's a good fit. Like, it's not a good fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just crazy to me that she alleges that they, you know, mishandled everything and the evidence.
Well, I mean, I guess if I was in prison the rest of my life, I'd be
– well, you could try to fight it. Yeah.
I would do something. But if I – I don't know. This just is so upsetting. It's – I have a hard time whenever people have especially this much evidence and they can't say – I mean – I guess this person's selfish anyway, but they can't say, I was wrong and I did this and hope that there's forgiveness down the road for them and hope that there's, you know, their kids apologizing to them and to the family instead of living this lie forever. They're just
going to
live it
forever. Or use your story for something good. Like, do something with yourself. While, you're in prison, but a lot of people do things from prison that end up being successful, whether they become an author or whether they, you know, whatever. We've had a few cases where they've done something. I mean, I guess
they've done good.
Was
it Carla Faye Baker in Texas who was executed several years ago? She was, like, one of the last female inmates to be executed in Texas or anywhere, I think. But she had turned her life around. But she was very adamant on what she did and her responsibility.
Right.
And when you hear that and then she's like, I didn't want my life to – that to be the story of my life, and she wanted to change it. I love that.
Right. Me too. I can respect that. Can't respect murdering someone.
No.
I can respect that when people go to prison and realize that there is other things they can do. Like, and, you know, they can make the most of their life in prison, I guess.
Well, make the other person's life You know, like they got cut short. So do something with your life.
Right.
Just admit your faults. My goodness.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, if I kill anybody, I'm going to have to admit it.
Right.
I just said that.
So who has the three little boys? I didn't read or see anything about where they were.
She challenged it this year, actually, that she wanted the kids to move in with her parents, but they're actually living with his parents. And so she filed all these motions for the kids to live with her parents. But I don't understand that. I'll never quite understand, like, a kid living with the murderer's parents.
Family.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah. So they have them, which I thought was really good because they love their son and they love those boys and, you know, did everything they could to help them. So that was a good thing.
That's so awful. Oh my gosh. It just
makes
me.
There's no good.
It just gives me like chills to even think about like those poor kids growing up and, you know, they're going to know that their mom is not around and that their mom like killed their dad. I mean, that's really awful.
It was both your parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're both gone.
So. Yep.
Well, we went on a big old tangent about our feelings on Darlene. But we basically do this about everything. So anything else you wanted to say on the case?
There's a couple of On My Datelines that have come in today. Do you want to read those?
Oh, yes. I want to read our On My Datelines. I've got several. So before that, our store is momsandmurder.threadless.com. We have a new design featuring a chicken named...
Mrs. Mother Clucker.
Mrs. Mother Clucker. The Amy.
I love it so much.
The lovely Amy from Instagram and everywhere made up the name for us. And Nikki T.
Nikki T.
She designed for us. So that is going to be up. And then we'll also have two more designs with the Moms and Murder podcast logo written on there. So if you wanted Moms and Murder merch, but you wanted to make sure people knew it was a podcast and not a cult, we'll have the word podcast added to those. So check those out. If you want to support us, patreon.com/momsandmurderpodcast. We appreciate all those patrons a lot. It's so very, very nice of you guys to support us. We really do appreciate it. And so here are our hashtag on my dateline. So the first one is from Carolyn R. on Facebook. It says, hashtag on my dateline, you'll need at least two boxes of wine to get through it.
I love that. I love that because I was like, well, let's see. Is it because it's going to be so crazy and long that you need that? Or is it because it's just going to blow your mind so much that you just need the wine? Either way, I'm down for the boxed wine. So
that's all Mandy cares about. The next one is Cassie T from our Facebook group. And hers is hashtag on my dateline. This is a wordy one, but she's so good with words that I just love it. So hashtag on my dateline, they'll only say the killer's name once and they'll use the most unflattering photo for him, like a sideways mugshot. You know, the kind where it looks like you fell out of a tree and hit every branch on the way down. my kids will do heart-wrenching interviews about how incredible I was, and it'll end with one of those vigils where everyone releases a lantern up into the sky while Taps plays. I'm willing to substitute bagpipes playing Amazing Grace here. Anderson Cooper, who she, for whatever reason, wants Anderson Cooper to do her dateline, will be moved to tears as he concludes that mine was a life well lived, while everyone in the background enjoys s'mores and wine and swapping awesome stories about me. That should about do it.
I love Cassie so much.
That's so flipping great. A couple more. People really like this one, so we'll do it. So this is from at Reality TV Pod. I recently found out about her podcast because she covers 90 Day Fiancé. So if you like 90 Day Fiancé and Teen Mom 2 and all of those things, she covers them. So it's at Reality TV Pod. The podcast is called Welcome to Reality TV. And so she said, I love a good Rocky Mountain Vista with Keith Morrison narrating, hashtag on my dateline, also hashtag wine. So we have a common theme there. We have two more. So Amanda H. from our Facebook group is hashtag on my dateline. The reenactments will be a level of drama everyone will be envious of. Hashtag Dramanda.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I fell out and died when I read that because, of course, my name is Amanda. So, but I've always, you know, you always hear, that's one I've never heard. Okay. That's one play Dramanda. On Amanda I've never heard. And I love it. And I'm totally going to start using it. Thank you so much, Amanda, for putting that out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Amanda. I'm really, really happy.
Well, because I think we're all tired of Amanda. Oh. Like stupid ones.
I'm not. I haven't even used that. So thanks for bringing that up. And then our last one is from Amber on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and my heart. it's one of my favorites. So hers is on my dateline. I save myself from becoming a victim. But my dog is the real hero because he warned me that this creep was in my house. So I hate to tell you, but you're not going to get a Dateline story for that one. So
nope. Sorry. You only get a Dateline when something terrible happens to you.
Exactly. And a bonus one, because, of course, Mankiewicz has got to be a part of this. Tiffany from Twitter. On my Dateline, Josh Mankiewicz must make this face a minimum of 3 times. And it's basically just the same smirk he likes to make on
But
his eyes are half closed. Which he replied, I look asleep, but simultaneously irritated.
I can't believe he replies to us.
Can we please just get him off of our feet? Please stop encouraging him. I'm getting scared. We're going to end up on a Dateline where Josh Mankiewicz will have killed us. And then
and then talks about it.
Oh, man. He'll interview himself from jail. And go, oh, my God. This is what they deserved. Don't let that happen. So, okay. My goodness. This went on far too long. We have a couple of promos this week, and I'm super excited about these. The first one is Criminology Podcast. So this past season, this first season of theirs, they covered the Zodiac Killer.
And, oh, I love that one.
Oh, my goodness. And they cover it in such detail. Like, I just hadn't. No idea about any of this. Like the first episode, I was like, I've never even heard of one of these things. So it's really, really great. And the day you're listening to this, which is November 14th and on, the History Channel is actually going to have a special on the Zodiac. And one of the guys from Criminology was actually, I think, a consultant.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So really, really cool.
Yeah.
And our second promo is from the lovely ladies, Allie and Charlie with Insight. And this is like, I don't even know what's happening. This is one of those shows.
This is the podcast that like gets you into podcasts.
Right. Like, this is like, I listened to them so long ago and, you know, like I loved listening to them. I heard about Generation Y, then I heard about them, and then I was like, you know what? I want to do a podcast. Not
that I She like started dreaming real big after she heard Insight.
No, but not like I could ever do what they were doing, but I just thought like I really like what they're doing and it just was interesting to me and I just thought they were great and they cover amazing cases. A ton of stuff you'll never hear about any other way but listening to them. So they are absolutely lovely, and I'm so excited that we're playing their promo. This is like
– Me too.
Hashtag me too. Big. Yeah. So I've done too many hashtag references. I got to stop. I'm much too old for that. But so anyway, so please check them out if you haven't, which you've listened to them. But if you're like the weird person that hasn't heard of them, then – I'm sorry for calling you weird, but also please listen to them. They're really great.
Yeah. So
check those out. And we'll be on Lainey's show, We're All Just Pretending Reading a Secret, sometime this week. So watch us screw up somebody else's life.
Right.
Check out her show as well. So have a great week. So sorry this is a long one. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, guys. This is Charlie from the Insight Podcast.
And this is Allie, two hosts from two continents.
Every week, we cover a new case from unsolved mysteries to forgotten history to crimes that changed or challenged our legal system in some way.
To get to know us and our podcast better, we recommend our episodes on Jean Spangler, Nicholas Barclay, the missing kid at the center of the documentary The Imposter, and Alison Baden Clay.
New episodes go up every Monday.
You can find us on iTunes and pretty much every other podcast.
Hey, true crime fans, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to try out our podcast, Criminology. In this true crime podcast, Morph and I go into every single detail of a case over an entire season. And the first season is on the infamous Zodiac and is out right now. So do us a favor, go check out Criminology to get your true crime fix.
You can subscribe to Criminology on iTunes or on your favorite Android app.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms of Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.